Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you guys have questions for John, text them in right now to 710-710. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So Sam Darnold is not the answer in New York. He's now the answer in Carolina. What do you make of what the Jets got in return for him? I saw Andrew Brandt tweet out, that tells you there was zero market for Sam Darnold out there, because that – they did not receive a haul by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I mean, a sixth-round pick this year, which is that, you know, Mason Cole just went from Arizona as a center, kind of a shaky center, to go to Minnesota for a sixth-round pick. And then, of course, there's two picks next year, a two and a four. But that shows you the discounted value. And I think what it does also show that, you know, everybody questions him so much that, you know, they're not going to put the fifth-year option on him, which would be over $18 million. And so it's like it's a one-year rental. And we've seen it so many times with one-year rentals, you just don't get value. I mean, you go back to you know, when you had the Denver deal, because remember they sent down to Houston, and of course you end up having, you know, you almost have to throw something in to make it happen. But no, this is a big discount. The thing that surprised me is that how come the Denver Broncos couldn't do that? You know, they are maybe not having the same pick as Carolina, but they're off one pick in the first round, probably one pick in the sixth round. But yeah, it was kind of baffling. And also, if you're San Francisco, how can you, you know, now think back and say, okay, we're justifying maybe taking a quarterback like Trey Lance, sitting him for a year, but giving up first-round picks next year and in 2023, when here for a sixth-round pick, you can get a quarterback that Kyle Shanahan does like.
You said they're not picking up his fifth-year option, but I'm reading from a couple different sources that they are going to pick up his fifth-year option.
I mean, again, they just got him today in the trade, so we'll see. But the problem is now, I think under the new rules, if you put the fifth-year option, which, again, is going to be over $18 million, that guarantees that he has to have it. Because before, you had the ability to pull out of the fifth-year option, you know, right before a certain date in April. But, yeah, it's still a little uncertain right now. But, again, I mean, they made the trade. You knew that David Tepper, the owner, was definitely aggressive in wanting to get something done at quarterback. And now it's a matter of, like, okay, what do you do with Teddy Bridgewater? Can you get any trade value for him? Because, you know, whatever they paid for Darnold is going to be less for Teddy Bridgewater. And, you know, they have to take a $20 million cap hit on Bridgewater. And you figure that he's going to be gone. But what are the options? I mean, you've got New England, maybe. You've got Washington, possibly, and then you've got Denver.
Yeah. Well, and Denver just, they've not been able to find their guy. Right now it's Drew Lock, but we'll see. I mean, he had some flashes. How much do you know about Joe Brady? He's the coach, offensive coordinator in Carolina, and, you know, they're talking about him helping Joe Burrow for his Heisman run, although Joe Burrow was pretty good. But anyway, do you think he's the quarterback whisperer that Sam Darnold needs, John?
Could be, yeah, because, again, I'm surprised, because I thought that I know you talk to different people around the league, and there's no doubt he'll be a head coach sometime in the next year or two. I thought maybe it was going to be this year, but they thought maybe that was going to be too early to be able to do it. But there's no doubt. I mean, he's one of the next offensive head coaches that's going to get something. And if he does some good things with Sam Darnold, it's going to be automatic that he's going to go someplace else. But, yeah, I think that, you know, he is a rising star and one that should be able to do some good things for Sam Darnold, because our good buddy Adam Gase did not do anything for Sam. And say what you want, at least there's more options for talent in Carolina on offense and there were with the Jets. I mean, you know, they've starved him for years. I mean, you know, Chris Herndon at tight end, oh god, and then wide receiver, not good. You know, they got him Le'Veon Bell, that turned into a disaster. Offensive line, particularly interior guard, not good. And at least in Carolina, they got a franchise right tackle. They're committed to try to get some good receivers, because they got some good receivers right now. Robbie Anderson has done a nice job there, and so yeah, he's got more weapons, and plus he's got Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, John, as far as Teddy Bridgewater goes, I wonder if you agree with me on this. That injury really screwed him up. I mean, when he got injured, I want to say it was like, what, 2016 maybe?
Right.
he was starting to really play well. Like, he was taking some good progressive steps. I remember looking at him on film before the Seahawks played them back then, back when he was with Minnesota.
Right.
And it just, he's never been able to get on track. I always hold out hope for him that he's able to get back on track, because I feel like he was, it just got taken away from him with that just freakish injury.
Well, the year that the Seahawks played Minnesota in frozen tundra, and how cold it was back in January, in the game where, you know, a missed kick ended up costing Minnesota the chance to win. I mean, he had a great season. He really did. I think that was his best season. He got the team into the playoffs. Were it not for the missed kick, they might have beaten the Seahawks in that playoff game. But and then after that, the injury just really knocked him down. And I guess you can technically say he hasn't been the same since. I mean, he went to New Orleans and, you know, was a backup there, had the five wins when Drew Brees couldn't play, did some good stuff there. But in Carolina, it just seemed like the owner didn't like him more than anything else. I mean, he didn't think he was going to be good enough. I mean, they thought he was going to be good enough because they gave him a three-year deal at $63 million, $21 million a year. He's been to the Pro Bowl, but right now, I guess you can say that he's on the outside going to be looking in.
Well, and they kind of went with Christian McCaffrey as the face of their franchise and who they were going to pay their money to, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, but let's put it this way, say what you want. I mean, here's Bridgewater. What was he making, like $7 million as a backup quarterback in the Saints? I mean, he gets triple the amount to go to Carolina, and here he was making $21 million a year. That's why I think that, you know, there's a chance he could end up with the Washington football team, because I know that the Washington football team has taken the position that, just like Denver, they want to have competition at the quarterback position. And sure, they have Taylor Heineke there. And they also have Kyle Allen, but if they can get Bridgewater, who at least the general, one of the top front office guys, Marty Herney, knows him because he was involved in signing him, you know, that could be one. And again, this is going to be one of those cheap type of deals, because again, you know, you can see with the fact that he's making $21 million a year, you know, they have to, I think it's base salary somewhere like about $8 million, and it may be because of the $10 million guarantee that he has in the contract. If they trade him, then they have to come back and, you know, maybe Carolina pay some of that guaranteed money to the team that ends up getting him.
It's an interesting move, because I'm not even, you can't make an argument right now that even if we're looking at Bridgewater as diminished from what he was, he's better than Darnold is right now.
Yeah.
He's a better quarterback.
Yeah, but he's not as injured, because he did have the big injury. I know that Sam's had some injuries in the last couple of years that's cost him some time. But, both were on losing teams last year. And of the two teams that were the worst, I mean, the Jets were clearly the second worst team in football, and it should have been the worst. I'm still amazed that they won two games right at the end of the season to go 2-14, because they look like a zero-win team. But, you know, there's more talent in Carolina, because, again, you look back at that New York Jet team, the only player on the finishing 53-man roster that had gone to the Pro Bowl was Frank Gore, who's, what, 36 years old? And then the only other one was C.J. Mosley, who opted out for the season, has only taken care of 121 plays in his 2 years, making $17 million a year.
Hey, John, Aaron Rodgers in the news this week. Did you see there's a taping of one of the, one of the finalists didn't know the answer for Final Jeopardy, and he wrote down who wanted to kick that field goal or something like that.
Yeah.
So they kind of had a little humorous exchange over that, but you know, the way he put it is, you know, he's in an article, you know, basically quoting him saying, I kind of threw a wrench in their plans. It's kind of like, you know, they expected me to fail and I didn't. I don't know. It just seemed very, the way that was put, very divisive. And always taking a little bit of a shot, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, in this case, you know, the Russell Wilson thing was wrong. Unfortunately, unless people keep bringing it up, that issue is over. In fact, I even went and I looked at some of the numbers today on the Seahawks. They have spent, in cash and money and all that stuff, $108 million on offense, and that's fourth best in the NFC, eighth best in the league, $68 million on defense, which is 27th. That didn't count today's deal that was signed by Al Woods, so they're probably about 24th right now with the $3 million deal being added on. But also, with the $108 million that they've spent, which is fourth best in the NFC, that doesn't include what Tyler Lockett got, because we haven't seen his contract yet. But in the case of Aaron Rodgers, and of course, what's weird, and so much of this is because they've had to rewrite six contracts. You know, David Bakhtiari, for example, he had to get all his signing bonus money up front so they can save money, and they've already paid a little bit of a roster bonus, not to save cap, but they paid that to Aaron Rodgers. You know, they're at like the number two or three spot, but for the second straight year, he's sitting there. Hey, where's the receivers you're supposed to get me? Hasn't gotten a receiver. They've not even been able to sign a single player in unrestricted free agency. Zero. And so here he is sitting there 2 years in a row saying, okay, are you going to get me some receivers? No. Are you getting me a tight end? No. They got a running back, certainly, in re-signing an Aaron Jones, and you can just see he's frustrated to a point where it's like, well, that's just the way it is. I don't know how the business is going to go. It's like I can't have no control of it, but, it's like, it doesn't seem like they want to give the commitment to keep him there because they took Jordan Love in that first round last year after the trade-up.
What is their salary cap situation? And even if it's looking bad, as we've seen with the Seahawks, who didn't look great financially speaking, teams have a knack of maneuvering and converting things into bonus and voidable years, all these little tricks they have to create room. Why have the Packers not been able to do that?
Well, because they were so far over, because they'd had the commitment to the two Smiths at linebacker. Those were big numbers. They had the and again, they've had the most right now is nine rewritten contracts with the Saints. Then, of course, you have seven with the Eagles. The Packers were at six. And I mean, it was so bad, they had to take their kicker, Mason Rudolph, and take, $1.6 million of.
Isn't he the backup in Pittsburgh?
Mason Crosby.
Ah.
No, he's
You said Mason Rudolph.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, Mason Crosby. Mason Crosby, he ended up getting $1.6 million, and they stretched it out over 5 years, taking him down to the minimum salary. But that's how bad their cap situation was. You know, Bakhtiari was making a bunch, and Kenny Clark's making a bunch. And so, they were really tight against the cap to a point right now where the worry in Green Bay is that this could be their last run. Because some of these big contracts are catching up to them big time, and of course they still have the big time money in Aaron Rodgers. But again, for the second straight off season, they haven't gotten him a receiver.
Hmm. Yeah, I can understand his frustration there.
Yeah,
John, do you think the Seahawks are done? We kind of just swatted that one around a little bit. I feel like the Seahawks, as far as free agency goes, they're still going to fill in some of the spots. Offensive line, I could see him getting another offensive line, but as far as, I think Bob put it this way, as far as newsworthy free agent signings, it feels like they're done.
Well, I think there's only three spots that they're going to do something right now, because I don't think they're going to go out and get another offensive lineman, because they ended up giving $2.3 million for Cedric Abueu as the backup tackle. They gave $1.2 million for Jordan Simmons. They still have Phil Haynes. They were able to get the deal done with Gabe Jackson. I think they're almost set, because, they're all, 10 offensive linemen right now. But, I still think that they'll be looking for a third receiver. And, of course, you're going to have Russell Wilson pushing for his buddy Antonio Brown.
Stop.
I know. But but I saw something today where it seems like the Seahawks are leaning toward Marquise Goodwin, the former 49er, former Eagle, because they traded him during his opt-out year to the Eagles, and then they voided his opt-out, and so he's a free agent. So that's, I think, one of the options. I think certainly at cornerback, from the standpoint that you've got two visits this week by Quentin Dunbar, going to the Detroit Lions and Arizona Cardinals, and certainly, if they can do something there, because again, they've got so little invested at the cornerback position, because you've got the $2.183 million that's there on the base salary of Trey Flowers with the escalator. I mean, you've got $920 with DJ Reed, so that's not a lot. Ugo Amadi's still in his rookie contract as a cornerback, so and you got the 1 year, $4 million deal guaranteed with Akello Witherspoon. So I still think they can get one more guy, but right now the highest paid cornerback they have is Witherspoon, who hasn't been here before.
Hey, I asked Dave this earlier about K.J. Wright. What's your feel? If you're going to put a percentage on it about him coming back to Seattle, it just feels like as days go on, it feels more likely, because I'm not hearing anything about another team out there, John. We had that little blurb about the Cowboys potentially having some interest, and since then, not a peep. I don't know. Are you hearing anything about any other team having an interest in him?
No, and I think it's a matter that the market's gone so dead for outside linebackers in a 4-3 defense that, first off, the fact that he's not done anything shows you he had absolutely no offers out there except for maybe what Seattle's willing to do. And you can see, where the signings are coming in right now. Anybody in their 30s is going to be hard to get anything over $3 million. And, of course, he talked about the idea of not taking a hometown discount. But right now, he doesn't have the discount's there. He has a hometown, but he doesn't have any other team. You can see the Cowboys, because all they've done so far, they put Keneal Neal, who ended up getting a one-year deal at $4 million to be the weak side linebacker after being a safety with Dan Quinn in Atlanta. But they also have Van Der Esch out there. They also have Jalen Smith. So they're set at linebacker. Even though they're not great at linebacker, the Raiders are pretty well taken care of that position. So it's like they're not doing anything. So I think right now he's pretty well gotten nothing unless he signs in Seattle. But the problem is, and we're probably seeing this with Richard Sherman, probably seeing this with K.J. Wright, is it worth it to sign a deal that may only be 1 year at less than half the money that you made the previous year?
All right, John, I'm going to make you choose. Maybe this isn't fair, but if you could just keep one tight end for the Seahawks, would it be Gerald Everett or Will Dissly?
I'd say right now it'd probably be Everett because, he's making $6 million on a one-year deal. He's been in the system, but of course, the great part about it, you don't have to make that decision because you get to keep three and sometimes maybe four, so you can keep both. But certainly, Dissly has to shake the injury bug.
Yeah.
He's complete. That's one thing we know. But Everett, of course, knows the system, and that gives him value, which is why they were able to get $6 million to him, and he catches the ball well. What did he have, 41 catches last year? His play time went up to like 54%, even though he was the backup tight end. And so, you give the guy $6 million, and you figure that they're going to use more two tight end sets probably, but right now, Everett's probably going to be the starter.
Yeah, 41 catches, as you said. I say the edge he has there, he's only missed three games.
Yeah.
Three games in 4 years, and with this, But although, I do think Dissly is as much as good as of hands, actually.
Yeah.
So, and then Everett still has to prove himself as a blocker. We talked to him the other day, by the way.
Okay.
Nice guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's the one thing with that in mind is that, they increased their number of snaps with two tight ends. They're going to do it again a little bit more this year because the one thing about the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan office is that you do more two tight ends because it makes you unpredictable because you line up in very, five formations doing outside sweeps on the outside zone runs. But sometimes you block them so differently after you get the ball snapped that it's hard for the defense to figure out what you're going to do, whether it's going to be a run, whether it's going to be a pass.
Hey, did you see Sammy Watkins did his introductory news conference with the Ravens?
Mm-hmm.
And in there, he basically said he thinks Lamar Jackson can become an elite quarterback in the NFL if the wide receivers get better separation for him. Is that the problem there? I mean, they're the 32nd ranked passing game in the league, and he's a guy that I think we talked about somebody speculating on the deal he might get that it would surpass basically what any quarterback's gotten at this point, which I wouldn't pay. But what do you think of that statement that it's more about the receivers getting separation than it might be Lamar Jackson?
No, I think that's a bad excuse. I mean, that's almost like Russell Wilson ripping the offensive line. And it's like, oh, you're coming to the team as the third Kansas City wide receiver, and now you're basically saying, hey, you're not getting separations with these wide receivers. I mean, part of the problem is Sammy Watkins made as great of an improvement from year one to year two as I've seen, because then he was able to throw well out of the pocket. I mean, still his ability to get the ball downfield despite the strong arm hasn't been there and hasn't been consistent, and he just didn't get that much better as a thrower. And then part of the problem could be Greg Roman, because Greg Roman made the scheme more predictable, at least that's according to Lamar Jackson, because of the way that they run the ball and some of the routes that they use and all those different things. So I'm suspect about that myself because, he's going to get good pay, but I don't think I'm going to pay $40 million for Sammy for Lamar Jackson at this stage, because again, it's like he needs to become a better passer.
Hey, John, I don't know if you heard any of the criticism of Justin Fields out of Ohio State. I guess there was something about his work ethic, and Ryan Day, his coach at Ohio State, came to his defense and everything. It's going to be interesting to see. I heard, you know, earlier today somebody describing Mac Jones as being the next Joe Montana. It's just how this thing shakes out, and I think maybe two of them make it. These quarterbacks, but still, it's pretty crazy to see where this shakes out. I think it's one of the more interesting years. You think it's going to go 1, 2, 3, 4?
No, I don't think it's going to go 4 unless somebody trades up with Atlanta, which very well could happen, because I think Atlanta is either going to take Penny Sewell, the tackle from Oregon, or take Pitts, the tight end. I think they're going to go on offense, but also they could take the tactics like, hey, we can trade down and maybe give a team that's looking for quarterback. Denver could do it. Detroit could do it. Maybe New England could do it. And then there would be 4. And then there's going to be a big scramble because, with the Darnold trade today, that takes a big piece out of the equation and now puts a little bit more of panic into teams like Washington, Denver, and New England to try to do something. Although I thought it was interesting is that, you still look back at San Francisco. Here they could have had, if they would have just stayed around that sixth round number for Darnold and, give 2 picks next year. And it's like, okay, now you can trade Garoppolo for a second round pick and you're coming out ahead. But again, if you can do something with Darnold, but they didn't do it. And so now he's in Carolina and the other teams are starting to scramble.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, another chance to win Mariner tickets. If you haven't been able to get through so far, you got another chance coming up. Also, how to best heckle the Astros. We're going to teach you. It's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We want to send you to tomorrow night's Mariners game. So give us a call, 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776. Do that in 1 minute if you're listening on the radio, or 30 seconds if you're on the stream. Caller number, what number did we say this time, Lefko? What do you want to do?
You want to do 9? Keep it going up?
If you want to.
And then change it up at the end. See, let's do 9.
37.
Then you'll have to answer the calls. I don't know how to count that high. Radio math.
So it looks like since Lefko is the one making the call back there, he's got to pick up the calls. Caller number 9 will win a pair of tickets to see the Mariners take on the White Sox tomorrow night. We're giving away a pair of tickets every hour, all day. So stay tuned. You've got one more chance coming up in the next hour. But good luck to you coming up. Baseball is back at T-Mobile Park. Get your tickets at Mariners.com. All right, so the final 3 games are happening before the April 16th showdown when that team, the villains, the Astros, come to town. And we tweeted out on our show page on Twitter, at Wyman and Bob, talking about we were giving away tickets. But also, what's your best heckle idea to torment the Astros when they come to town, April 16th through the 18th? And you guys can weigh in on that if you're on Twitter, at Wyman and Bob. But some interesting – now, I don't know what they're going to allow people to bring into the ballpark. I know people want to bring in trash can lids and things like that. I don't know what's allowed there. I don't know if you're allowed to bring in props. That'd be cool. I'd like to see people dressed as trash cans.
Yeah. Yeah. One guy is a garbage can. The other guy with a stick is a stick.
Yeah.
I don't know if we heard that in the A's series or not. I know that there was a lot of laughing and cheering when one of the Astros got beaned.
Yeah. Correa got plunked and everybody went, which is what I hope happens here in Seattle.
Yeah. I was asking Danny, and I'm just looking through some of his responses. He said he'd bring a trash can and a drumstick. Danny, a great heckler. Great. I mean, it's embarrassing if you're sitting next to him.
He's pretty constant. He's pretty consistent.
He is. Right. Yeah. It's, like I said, we were at a Tampa game and there was a local guy and somebody was yelling his name out like, Daniel, like the guy was Daniel, whoever it was going to look up there and go, oh yeah, I remember you. You're from the eighth grade. Right. So then Danny all of a sudden just starts mocking him and screaming out Daniel. And so, you know, so now there's two people in the ballpark screaming out Daniel. And then, you know, he's talking about calling every pitch, curveball, changeup. Everyone hates you. Nobody likes you. I don't know. That one's pretty basic, but yeah, text it in. I think it'd be
What was the one about Mexico and giving the state of Texas back to Mexico or something like that?
Something like that, you know. But,
oh, yeah. What would and you guys can text in or you can weigh in on Twitter if you're on Twitter at Wyman and Bob or text in. What would you do? What's the best heckle for this team? And some of the responses on Twitter, I'll give you some of those. Somebody there, the obvious, a bat hitting a garbage can, replacing the clapping when they've got the let's go chant. excuse me. I've got tickets to the Astros game, so I can heckle them. I dress as a trash can lid, but I'm afraid they'd try to hit me. Get it on, bang a gong, walk up music for every batter.
Oh, bang a gong. Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I like that.
Have Bat Boy or Bat Girl dress as Mr. Grouch from Sesame Street. Every infield foul ball or bat exchange would see something like, and then they've got the gif of Oscar coming out of the garbage can.
Yeah. Wasn't somebody saying on, was it Bregman that was saying, I'm tired of this? Or
I think it was Correa.
Yeah.
Who was like, saying like, all right, it's getting like complaining that they've had it too much. Yeah. It's enough already kind of, and I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember his exact words, but it was along the lines of, yeah, enough already. I'm thinking, excuse me? You just played a season with no fans. You didn't get anything.
Right.
What do you mean enough? Are you that soft? Enough. We've suffered enough. Shut up.
That couldn't have been a worse thing to say.
Are you kidding me? You guys got the biggest break in the world on the heels of a cheating scandal. The very next season, not only is it a shortened season by 102 games, you are not exposed to the venom and vitriol of opposing fans. Not right. once. And you're saying, it's enough. You guys have been mean to us.
There's not a worse thing that you could say. Well, I'm just imagine most hecklers are like Danny. And if you said something like that to Danny, he would just ramp it up.
Twofold. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would. We have to go back and find his words. Maybe that's what I would do is go out there and mock his words. Just do him in a cry voice. Just sit there and recite his words about enough. You guys are picking on us. It was such a soft statement. It was so lame. And I love that the crowd cheered when he got plunked. I'm not looking for anybody to get hurt or throw out anybody's head or anything like that. But hey, if Marco happens to plunk one of these guys, I'm gonna cheer.
He'd be the one.
If I'd like to see Kikuchi or Paxton do it, little fireballer up there, 97 in the keister or you know in the ribs or whatever. Awesome.
I'll tell you what. You know when we talked to Marco about it. You know, it's like the way he put it really made it, I don't know, resonate, I guess, with me much more. He's like, that's my whole game, man. I'm not a fireballer. I'm a location pitcher, and I'm a strategy guy. It's all about you don't know what's coming next. All of it. And when they don't, I mean, I don't think that there's a better advantage of any kind of information or anything you could possibly know in any sport. I mean, even if it was a football play, like, you know, whether it's a run or a pass or you know, what hole they're going to run it in, you still got to go up there and blast a guy and try to, you know, defeat a blocker. But this is entirely different. What pitch is coming? That's the biggest secret in all of sports, isn't it? I'm trying to think of anything else where, the goalie kick, those guys basically, don't they just guess when there's a free kick?
I don't want to diminish what the skill level imply. Well, they're just guessing, but it feels like they're guessing.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you don't know which way the guy's going
to
go.
It's impossible to react that quickly.
You got a 50-50 shot.
Yeah.
Going right. I hope he kicks it to the right.
Yeah.
But
as far as that goes, I mean, I don't think that there's a bigger advantage that you can have.
Yeah, because in football, you get a sense, I would guess, by the formation. Mm-hmm. Something looks familiar. You're kind of seeing it like, okay, we've seen them in this formation, so this is that run play again, or here's that little swing pass, or whatever. I think you get a sense. Basketball, kind of the same thing. Yeah, I mean, pitcher, it's all deception. It's all deception.
Especially for a guy like Marco.
Yeah, it's all about deception and keeping that batter on their heels. And, yeah, so I would say you're right. It's probably the biggest mystery in sports in terms of what's what's going to happen here? What's the pitch going to be versus what's the play going to be in football?
Right.
Same with the NBA. So, yeah, once you take that away, we talked about Shohei Ohtani throwing over 100 miles an hour. Guys will time that eventually. They're going to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to hit 100 miles an hour, as ridiculous as that sounds. Major league hitters, if they know it's coming, they're going to gear up, and they might cheat on that fastball. They're going to get a quick – they're going to get an early start on it, so to speak. So they're going to find a way to capitalize on that if they know that it's coming. It's
But, you know, there's also possibly a changeup coming, and you're going to be way out in front of that. So
yeah.
It's just – it's everything. And just hearing it from Marco, that really – you know, and I didn't get the – feeling particularly one way or the other, whether he had an axe to grind or whether he thinks he's going to, you know, take any kind of action or anything. But he was pretty adamant about it being a really bad case of cheating, and he wasn't happy about it. But, you know, just hearing it from him, who is a guy who benefits from that secret.
Yeah, that's all he's got, as he said. He's not blown by people at 97, 98 miles an hour. It's not his game.
Well, so. I feel bad saying, well, he doesn't have anything else. I mean, he's still a very good pitcher, but, I mean, that's the gist of what he does. That's what makes him great.
Yep, his slider, his changeup, that deception, and his command. So, yeah, he doesn't have the luxury of, well, even if they know the fastball's coming, let's see if they can catch up to it.
Right.
You know, he's got to be precise. And if they know it's coming, they're going to tee off. All right, coming up, Charles Barkley, he always delivers. You're going to hear his latest gem. Coming up when we sweep the dial with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Backboarding in and... I don't know. I've always wanted to run up on the table and, you know, like Kobe and D-Wade and go like that. And, I mean, that's the first thing I did, but, man.
It's Jalen Suggs talking about a celebration after his game-winning three-point shot against UCLA in overtime. Jumping up on the table, everybody going nuts as they should have. It was glorious to see that. Made a great defensive play in that game, too. Stripping the ball, was it from Riley? Somebody will correct if I'm wrong on the text, but I think it was Riley. It was a great defensive play he made. And then turns out he's the guy hitting the game-winning shot in one of the great college basketball games you're going to find, and it'll be talked about for years to come.
Yeah, you know, it's too bad. I'm blanking on the guy's name again, but the transfer from Kentucky. You know, he takes it off the front of the rim, gets his own rebound, and lays it in. That was a really nice play by him. Is it Jaquez? Juzang.
Yeah.
Johnny Juzang. Just a beautiful play. And it was just...
He's a hell of a player.
Yeah. He had like 29 points. And, you know, the way he did that, it was just a really nice play. And you'd think, oh, yeah, that got you into another overtime. And then Suggs comes down and just... You know, and look, it wasn't some, you know, desperation chug shot that you just throw it over your head. I mean, like... Few said, he goes, I know, you know, people aren't going to believe this, but we practice that a lot. They practice that shot. So, and Suggs, what a great athlete, man. I mean, we talked last week about the bounce pass that he threw and how he was a legitimate Division I, and the guy's only a freshman, but a legitimate Division I quarterback.
Do you see his highlights? You didn't see it on Twitter. You're not on there. But people were tweeting out videos of him as a high school football player, and apparently he was recruited by a bunch of the bigger schools.
Yep.
As a football player.
Yeah, I saw some of his plays on, you can look it up. And, you know, he's just a great athlete, really good athlete. So, anyway, yeah, and the only freshman, Timmy, is like a sophomore, I think. So, yeah, they've done such a great job there. I'm really excited for this game tonight.
The difference between Baylor and Gonzaga and these other teams, Houston got some Joes. All these teams got some Joes. These the only two guys got gyms and Joes, and that's what win games. A lot of teams got gyms and gyms. A lot of teams got some Joes. Baylor and Gonzaga, the only two teams in the tournament got gyms and Joes.
What the hell's he talking about? Is he just talking about ordinary guys, just not superstars? Is that a Joe?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That like he's got the superstars, but then he's also got the guys that fill in. I'm one that thinks everything Barkley says is brilliant.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out where he was good. Jim's and Joe. Some have Joe's. but they got gyms too.
Earlier on in the broadcast, he had an observation that, like, I filmed and sent to almost every friend that I have. It was describing things that are going on in this country right now, and I just the way that he puts things is just very simple, very straightforward.
He's going to have to learn to say Gonzaga.
I typically always agree with him. But, yeah, the East Coast people that continue to call it Gonzaga. I don't think you should be able to do an ESPN report if you're going to call it Gonzaga.
They're not the Zogs. They're the Zags.
Right.
But, yeah, he entertains me. I'm not quite sure what he was trying to say. I assume he's just talking about, you know, blue collar, get in there, do the dirty work type of players. That's my assumption.
Right. Maybe that's the Joes.
Yeah, maybe. Is there a difference between a Jim and a Joe?
Well, I don't know. Joe Schmagaggy.
Well,
Joe
Schmagaggy, he's everywhere. He's everywhere.
He's like just a common man.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe it's the Jimmies. What do you think, Lefko?
Well, yeah, what's better? Yeah, I guess a Jim would be better than a Joe?
I don't know.
Well, James versus Joseph. Yeah, not sure.
There are some good Joes, though, in sports. Joe Montana.
Yeah, he was pretty good. You're right.
It's been a road that's had a lot of tough days, and I've had people in my corner that have always believed in me, and even when, you know, I've kind of believed less in myself. This one will hold a special place in my heart, just as kind of knocking off that monkey that, you know, I don't really have to answer those questions of. It's been this long since you won, and at this point it's been about 20 minutes, so that's more recent than anyone else.
As Jordan Spieth, who won his first tournament since 2017, it's been that long? My goodness. I know he'd been playing better and had some nice finishes, hadn't won, but he won this. Good for him. As I said before, when somebody that you're around a fair amount is just so over the top about a certain player or team, sometimes it could push you the other direction. And that's
Who's
how it
that?
Worked. That would be Mike Salk. And Kyle Brown came by earlier after I said it with the palms up in the air, like, what are you talking about? Him and Salk would commiserate together with their Jordan Spieth love and just really into everything about him that was fantastic. His clothing, his game, all of that. And I was like, yeah, no, I think I may want him to lose.
Wait, the tight pants and the polyester shirts?
I don't know if they were specific about the tight pants, just his look.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Just
sometimes I'll go, well, that guy looks good in a uniform, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I remember old coaches go, boy, that guy looks good in a uniform, doesn't he? Look at that guy.
Looks like he can play.
Looks like, yeah, he looks like he can play. Yeah. Like Clowney. You're like, that's a guy that looks good in a uniform.
He's a machine.
But, yeah, I'm not so sure about Jordan Spieth. He looks like maybe he could do some push-ups. Maybe
he's in need of push-ups, you mean?
Maybe a little bit. That's what I would say. I'm not saying he's overweight like I am. I'm saying that he just needs to do some push-ups.
Okay. So,
are you a Bryson DeChambeau fan? The really yoked golfer? You should take a look at him. And everyone calls him DeChambeau.
Bro. Yeah. Yeah, see, I would say I at least have muscle. I mean, it's covered in fat, but at least there's some in there. I don't think Jordan Spieth has any.
DeChambeau, he's kind of whiny. Isn't he the one that was kind of whining about some of the rules and all that?
Yeah, he's very particular.
Forget him. He's out.
What's he particular about?
Everything. You have to do things a certain way.
A complainer.
You have to put his ball mark a certain way. And yeah, media can't stand it. The cameras are in the way.
Oh, I remember that.
He's whiny. He's out. Was it Brooks Koepka who was talking about that he sort of loses focus toward the end of the round, like it's a long round? Kind of echoing what we were talking about earlier, you kind of get bored. I think he said something around the 15th hole or something. It'll just be kind of like, ugh, all right, let's go. I'm ready. I think it was Koepka that said something like that, and I appreciated that from a pro golfer. Said, yeah, I lose focus sometimes. It's a long time to be out there.
It is. Yeah, it's too long.
Hey, a little bit of news here for you concerning the Seattle Seahawks. According to Adam Schefter, former Seahawks defensive back Quentin Dunbar is signing a one-year deal with the Detroit Lions per his agent. So Dunbar is no longer part of the proceedings in terms of a wish list for cornerbacks out there.
I hope he stinks it up there. I really do. I hope he doesn't become the guy that they thought he was going to be, and it looked like at times he could be. So, yeah, that's always kind of painful. But, yeah, I mean, look, the injuries, he had a rough offseason, didn't work out here. Didn't work out. But yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, it was not like on the Malik McDowell level as far as what happened. I mean, at least you got something out of him. But
at least we knew what he looked like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I couldn't pick Malik McDowell out of a lineup.
Not a chance. Not a chance. He could stand right in this room, sit next to us, and I'd be like, who's the dude over here? Who is that? Yeah, so Dunbar moves on. I haven't seen anything in the way of terms. It's a one-year deal. I'm not sure what sort of money he's looking at or incentives. We'll pass that along as we find out. But again, in case you're just tuning in, the official word from Dunbar's agent is that he's moving on after a year with the Seahawks, signs a one-year deal with the Detroit Lions. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, is the new host of Jeopardy taking passive-aggressive shots at Russell Wilson? That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.